Morning, everyone. Wednesday, May 18. The Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever you're listening. And a nervy morning for Liverpool fans. 1-1 at half time. It's St Mary's against Southampton. Liverpool conceded the first goal, then equalised, but they need to win this game, really. Even though a draw would give them an outside hope, but a loss would hand Man City the title. But Liverpool really need to win this morning to keep it alive heading into the final day. Now, Loz and I have just watched a celebration gone wrong as well overnight. Bidium Girmay, who's an Eritrean cyclist, well, he was taken to hospital. He's made history, by the way, the Giro d'Italia, the first black African rider to win a Grand Tour stage. And there he is, standing on the podium, standing over the top of his celebratory champagne, popped the cork straight in his eye. Off to hospital.
Oh, no.
Off to hospital. And, well, he's been discharged with a bandage over his eye, but that is a celebration gone wrong. You got any others you can think of? Celebrations gone wrong? Let us know. 0419 767 272 on the text line. There you go, Clarky. Yeah, anyone in, you know, post ashes triumphs in the change room, someone just make a complete goose of themselves?
Morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. I'm not sure I've ever seen the champagne cork get cracked into someone's face or eye. Always shenanigans, though. Generally, there's a trophy broken or a couple of misdemeanors. But no, I can't think of, off the top of my head, I can't think of a celebration where someone's had to go to hospital. You were there. My 40th birthday at my house when we decided to play a game of indoor cricket. Remember, one of my mates popped his shoulder out.
Oh.
Blake. So we had to get an ambulance for him to go to hospital.
Yeah, that's a celebration.
We
didn't win anything.
No, of course. And I'm not sure what we're celebrating. Another day older. Certainly no wiser playing indoor cricket in my house. But he popped his shoulder out bowling. Didn't actually. Wasn't doing anything stupid, just bowled a ball, but he's actually had surgery on it. Not because of that, but because it popped out so regularly. Mm. Anytime he went, he loved his surfing, but anytime he went for a surf, he popped his shoulder out. So, yeah, that's probably the only one I can think of. But, no, I don't remember too many champagne corks in the eye. That's especially if you know it's coming out, right? You're shaking the bottle, you're prepping for the explosion. I'm not sure why the eye was anywhere near it, but anyway.
He was standing right over the top of it. Probably not the way to go
about
it.
So maybe he didn't shake it. Maybe somebody else has done the shaking, put it down, and he's just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm.
Anyway, hope he's okay.
Well, hopefully. Celebrating a win anyway. Good morning, Loz. How are you?
Yeah, morning, boys. Not too bad. Some interesting selections on the weekend for the weekend's games. Some of the clubs are starting to make some moves and starting to make some changes through necessity. But great to see Marcus Sivo being named on the interchange bench for Parramatta. We're unsure of whether he'll play or not, but he has been named in that extended squad. He spent the best part of 6 months on the sideline with a knee reconstruction, getting that ready to go when Parramatta could do with his strength out wide. They've missed him a little bit. Brent Naden. Shock call there yesterday, leaving the Dogs. I don't think he'll be the first one to leave the Dogs, but he'll come up against his former club on Friday night when the Tigers take on the Bulldogs, and he's been named in jumper number 21.
That's extraordinary, Loz.
Interesting selection, isn't it?
Straight away gone. Make
a decision in less than 24 hours and you're gone. But I think that's the first of a clean out. There at the Dogs. I think there's a lot of players that they'll try and move on. There'll be other that'll be coming off contract. I think it's just the start of it. They've released their head of performance, Dan Ferris. You would think that Steve Hansen, the consultant there, he was highly critical of the decision to remove Trent Barrett. I don't know whether he'll stick around. But I think the Bulldogs are going through some change. Mick Potter has been announced as the interim coach, well, about to be named as the interim coach. Obviously they've got no faith in the assistants there to do that job. Sander Cotton and Dave Ferner. So there's plenty of changes going on there at the Doggies.
There you go, Clarky. You got a new player, Brent
like
Naden.
It. Like it. I think he's good. I think he'll be good for the club. I'm still, as much as, it's great for West Tigers. how this can happen in sport is ridiculous, in my opinion. You can just, halfway through a season, decide to pack up and leave, and then 5 days later, 4 days later, you're representing another team against your old team. It's just hard to stick loyal to a team or to certain players when, again, you know, if I go for West Tigers, you do over time, you fall in love with the players, and then someone packs up and leaves and you're playing against them the next week's not good as a fan, I don't think.
Well, the interesting thing about this one is he just joined the club from Penrith and he's played 8 games.
Yeah.
And now he's crazy. Gone. I mean, it's unusual.
Oh, it is unusual. He signed a play under Trent Barrett, and obviously he had a strong relationship with Trent. But I think the roster, as we continue to talk about the Bulldogs, it's not a balanced roster. Mm. And they're looking to make salary cap space, and the player has to agree to it, and the club agree to it, and they move on. It's just something that we've seen.
This couldn't have just happened this week, though, Lois. Surely Naden's had conversation with the Tigers leading up to this. Surely it's not Trent Barrett resigns. Okay, manager get on the phone that day and now leave the next day.
Oh, yeah, could be.
That quickly?
Oh, yeah. I think that Gus has probably had a conversation with a lot of the players and said, well, if you don't feel like you want to stick around, come and see me.
Really?
And we'll try and get a job done where you can move on. Yeah, he's ruthless, Gus, when it comes to roster management. Oh, so I would think that, yeah, this has all just taken place in a short space of time. And as I said, I don't think it'll be the last. I think there'll be a lot of other players that'll be tapped on the shoulder that if you can get an opportunity somewhere else, you can go. You can take that up. Because they've got to get their salary cap in order. They've got to get a balanced squad. They've got players coming to the team,
Why did they buy Naden in the first place then? Why did they buy Naden in the first place?
Well, they needed a different roster. So they were trying to put a roster together and they were after players and they were just grabbing whoever they could because what they had in the past wasn't working. So they had to go and attract different players to the club.
8 games and you booted out. You're told, yeah, you can go if you want.
Well, he might have said to them, I'm not happy here. I came to play under Trent. And they've agreed to release him from his contract. You know, details will come out in the next week or two. But I think that they have to try and do something different, the Bulldogs. Mm. And if both parties are in agreement that it's the best move for each other, shake hands and move on.
Braith and Astor on NRL 360 last night, player manager, ex-Bulldog, of course, suggested that Naden hadn't been overly popular with his teammates. That's just what Braith and Astor said last night. So I think there might be more to his move as well behind the scenes than what we might see on the surface. So anyway, it's just begun, hasn't it, there at Belmore. Incredible for Dogs fans, really, because I'm sure we were having the same conversations 18 months ago about clean outs and regenerating the roster. And here we go again, basically. So it's just a rebuild that never ends there at Canterbury.
And
Tigers fans know all about that.
But this is the other thing I find it hard to comprehend. So you haven't elected your full-time coach, right? At the moment, they're having someone come and stand in. So how can the club be making... We talk about leadership and accountability. How can the club be sacking players, buying new players, without having a head coach? Surely the head coach has got to have a say in the players that are at the club.
Yeah, they haven't bought any coaches yet, any players yet.
No, but they're obviously released one.
Yeah, to provide some salary cap relief.
But what how can you make any of those decisions? What if the new coach wants Naden? Bad luck. But this is my point. You can't ask somebody to take accountability if you're not going to give them accountability. What if the new coach says, mate, I want Naden, you're going to buy him back?
Yeah.
This is the
predicament that the Bulldogs are in. They've given control to Gus. So that's where it lays. So
then he needs to be accountable. No, the coach is now 2IC. The coach is the vice-captain then.
Always. Always under Gus. That's how it operates. So Gus is in charge. Gus will make the decision along with the coach on who will come to the club. And they'll try and rebalance the roster to get it in the best possible shape as they can. And they will try and make some space so they can go to the marketplace. And I'm assuming they will look to get a halfback or they'll look to get a fullback. They'll look to get a nine. That's where I reckon.
I feel like we say this all the time about coaches. When a coach comes to the club, we say, well, we've got to allow him some time to be able to get the stock that he wants and build his own team. Yet the Bulldogs are going to do the same thing. Gus is going to get the team that he wants or the squad that he wants, but he's not the coach.
Yeah, but they can't get any players at the moment because they've got no money. Yeah, so what he's trying to do...
But that's my point. Isn't the most important stage one here...
Is to
employ my coach? Get the coach, because then the coach might say, you know what? He might disagree with you and me. Mm. He might say, mate, the stock that we have now, all I need is I want a number seven. But the rest is okay. He mightn't want to release any of those players.
He mightn't have that autonomy. They've made it clear that Gus is running the football program. So yeah. Gus is in charge. So if you take on that job, you know that Gus is your boss.
But I understand
that. So if you go into any organisation, you find out what the structure of management is. So if the structure is that I'm in charge,
yep.
Well, I have full autonomy. But if I want to take on this job and Gus is sitting above me,
got that.
You understand what you're walking into.
So the coach should not be fired then when the team does not perform, Gus should be.
Well, people have to be accountable.
So Gus is 100% accountable by the sound of
this. The coach will be accountable. But, they haven't signed any player yet.
Yeah.
What they're doing is being able to free up some salary cap space. I don't know whether Gus will go to the marketplace and buy any players without the coach being in place. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, what he's doing at the moment, he's just trying to get as much space as he possibly can to try and rejig this roster. Because the roster at the moment, it's an imbalanced one.
Loving already on the text line, by the way, celebration's gone wrong. Aaron Woods. In State of Origin, completely missing the huddle.
Jumping over the top.
You would have been coached then, were you, Loss?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, would have had some fun in the video with that afterwards.
No, Woodsy, yeah. No,
someone else.
I don't think he's ever let that down.
This is a very good one. Remember this. Good morning, men. How about Tony Finau's celebration after his hole-in-one? That was in the par 3 comp at Augusta. He sunk it and then busted his ankle during the celebration.
The cat-eye raid.
Yeah, and then it popped straight back in. Yeah. Morning, boys. Celebration's gone wrong. Laurie Daly, when he incorrectly claimed one of your Queensland listeners' multis of Winks and Farlap as one of his own. Cheers, Wol.
No, Wol. Wol. Steady up there, brother. I'll tell you what happened. Without me, you wouldn't have got that multi.
That's it. Celebrate the wins. Now, I'll have to proofread that text in the interim. Okay, back page. In fact, just in the City Morning Herald as well, we're talking about the Brent Naden departure from the Dogs to the Tigers, which is the feature of the back pages on the back page of the Telegraph. Carnage in the kennel. The Australian bloodshed at Belmore continues. City Morning Herald on the back page there. Potter set to fill coaching hot seat for rest of Bulldog season, but also in the City Morning Herald, they're saying that the reason that he's left the Dogs and gone to Concord and the Tigers is because he wants to play centre. And that's a primary reason. But yeah, when you rate games into your Dogs career, really?
Yeah, no. I think what's happened is that they've had a conversation and it's been made clear that if people want to leave, they can, and we'll make something happen. And I reckon, Gus, this won't be the last that he's tap on the shoulder and say, listen, if you want to leave, you can, because we're going to look at a clean out here. We need to get some room under our salary cap and we need to target some different players. Mm. I think that's how it's turned out.
So as Loz mentioned, on the back page of the telly there, the carnage in the kennel. So gone Barrett, gone Ferris, who's the high performance manager. Going, question mark, Steve Hansen, who's not overly happy with what he's witnessed there at the Dogs and the departure of Trent Barrett. Jack Hetherington, the Telegraph saying here that he's been told he can leave at the end of the season. And even the club sponsor, Arthur Laundy, he wants to get to the bottom of it. Never good to, annoy the major sponsor of your club, is it, Loss?
No, you want to try and keep them as close as you possibly can, in particular when they're tipping in a lot of money. But I think this is the place that the Bulldogs are in, and this is what I think Phil Gould's been talking about for the last couple of years. The fact is that they've made some poor decisions and they need to reset. They need to start over again. They've got some quality players coming to the club next season in Kickow, Reed Marnie. You've got Ryan Sutton there as well. You add Adokar, you add Burton. You're starting to get some strike. But again, you still need some key position players, and I reckon that'll be one of the first things they look to try and bring into the organisation is some leadership in those key positions.
Also in the telly today, Pup, just seeing Matthew Mott, the Aussie women's coach, is on the verge of getting the job at England. Hmm. Yeah, their one-day coach, so he's obviously conquered all there. So he's going to get the job as the white ball coach at England. So poor Collingwood, they're going to overlook one of their own.
Interesting.
And so he'll be quickly cuddling up to Brendan McCullum, you would think, then, the test coach.
He's been good, Motti, though. He's been Australian women's coach for a long time, so and had a lot of success. You talk about someone doing the work and being around an Australian setup for a long time, and you look at their results, phenomenal. Probably better than any cricket team in the world over the period of time what he's been there. So his numbers are unbelievable. So great opportunity for him. He'll be super excited, Monty.
Also, the Australian Swimming Championships start today, and I feel like I'm 40. This is, Kyle Chalmers saying that as he prepares to try and get to the Paris 2024 Games, he's talking about the brutal toll that swimming has taken on his body. I'll tell you what, he doesn't look 40. Looks about 20.
Fit.
I mean, he's
a big unit, isn't he?
Oh, huge. I mean, what the training that these guys... I'll never forget someone did a story, Michael Phelps, at the peak of his powers, the food he ate every day. And that's the dream. I mean, he just ate whatever he wanted.
Keep eating.
Yeah.
Just burn the calories.
Didn't matter what what it was. No. All the junk under the sun. You're training like those guys are, go for gold.
And that's the length of sessions as well. Like, you go and train for an hour and you go, well, I've had it. Yet these guys are doing 4 hours in the pool, 6 hours in the pool in one go. Like, can you imagine? Oh, well, no, I couldn't imagine that. I couldn't imagine the discipline to go up and down staring at a black line for that amount of time. But then your body as well. You talk about fatigue and burning calories. My God. Different level.
Yeah, they work hard, don't they?
They probably say that about us, though. You stand and watch the grass grow for 8 hours in the field. How do you do that? Or how do you go and bat for...
Yeah, but you can take your mind off things.
They would say especially the same people thing. In the crowd,
they
just
would
start
say the same thing, I suppose, when they're swimming up and down in a lane. But it's a challenging sport, isn't it? In particular, long-distance swimming.
I'd need headphones. I'd need to swim with music.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I could be in my head for that long. It would be a dangerous place to be in silence.
You think about some weird things.
At least cricket, you can hear the noise, right? Yeah. You got the crowd,
you get
sledged, you get abused. Yeah. Like, you got something going on in your head. Even when you're batting, there's still
someone to talk to, too.
Swimming, I'd be in my head for too long, be dangerous.
Be honest with cricket, because, the amount of times, Loz, we go to the cricket and barely watch the cricket, you just watch stuff happening in the crowd.
Yep.
I mean, you're obviously focused, you've got to be. But how often would you just...
Every single ball.
Have a wander into the crowd, see what's going on over there. So, look at that fear snake over there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You'd have to, sure.
Batting, fielding, whatever you're doing. You need that distraction. Like you say, switch on, switch off. So the only time I was so carefree until the bowler got to the top of his mark, and then I had a routine that I went through the whole time. But generally when I was at my best, in between balls when I was batting, it was like, you were just thinking about whatever was going on in your life, whatever was around you. You could hear music in the background, something's happening over in the members' stand. It was just every single ball you were looking for something to take your mind off that complete concentration focus just to give you that release.
I swear, I was at the Boxing Day test in Melbourne just last December, and I swear I spent one whole session watching security kick out people who were being egged to skull beers. It went on for 2 hours.
The beer snake is one of the best parts of batting because you just watch that. Like, that would take, could take 10 overs. You just watch it get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you just see the police and just everyone booted out.
What's wrong with that?
Bring back the beer snake.
How's that dangerous?
Right. It's like the wave. I think the Mexican wave. That used to be unreal until it sounds like there's just beer thrown everywhere. Yeah.
And back in the 90s, not just beer.
Well, yeah. Good times. Good times.
Been a part of that, Mitter?
Absolutely not. Might have been a victim as a kid.
I
remember once said, back in the 90s when the one getting a ticket to a one-day game in Sydney, Dad would ring Ticket Tech. The minute they open, 9 o'clock in June for a game in January, And so, you know, if you were late, you ended up on the hill.
Well, I love watching those old matches when they still had the hill. And people would bring the Eskies in.
Yeah.
They'd bring their food and their drink in and they'd be there all day.
What do you think was in with the ice?
Well, that's what I mean.
Vodka.
It'd be vodka. Oh, thank you. I think you're allowed to bring your own beer in those days.
Yeah,
bring
for whatever. A period, and then that changed.
And that all stopped.
Mm. But people still found ways around it.
There's always a rort, Middo.
Yeah.
It's only a rort if you're not in on it.
Yeah. Have we got some more celebrations gone wrong? Here we go. Laurie Daly after a try, then trying to find his seat at State of Origin, and Gus taking it. Rooster Man. One of the most...
Yeah, I don't know whether it was after a try. I don't know was happening. I think it was just a moment in the game. Mm.
It is some of the most famous sideline vision in Australian rugby league, though, isn't it?
It would be. It'd be up there. It'd be in the top 10 moments, for sure.
On YouTube, we'll have to see how many views that's had.
I reckon it'd be
iconic. Liverpool and Southampton 1-1 at St Mary's. 62nd minute of that Premier League game this morning. Now, last night in the A-League semi-final, the first leg, and Melbourne Victory beat Western United 1-0. At Amy Park, so they got 1 foot in the grand final. Also this morning in the championship over at England, Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United for a spot against Huddersfield in the championship playoff final. And that game is 1-1. Forest leads 2-1 on aggregate. So, a nervy finish to that game as well. There's about half an hour to go in that contest. Now, we've got Dick Fane coming up shortly, Dean Bulldog Richie later this morning. And Bulldog has written an exclusive today in the Telegraph saying that the Tigers are considering a play for Rooster Angus Crichton at the club. He's off contract. I think he signed had a one-year extension last year, but according to Bulldog's report, he's verbally agreed to extend at the Roosters, but yet the Tigers could still make a play. Mm. For Angus Crichton.
Be a good pickup. Angus Crichton, I think he's a wonderful player. He hasn't reached the level he has the last couple of seasons yet with the Roosters, but I think he'd be a good pickup for the Tigers. They're losing a couple of their back rowers. Next season, one's off to Manly, one's off to the Cowboys, but they've picked up Papali'i from Parramatta, and if you get Crichton as the other edge back rower, you've still got a couple of young guys there in their squad. I think that'd be dangerous on both sides of the field. You got edge back rows that can, you know, hit a side of the field. They're line breakers. They are very tough players. I think that'd be a very, very good pickup for the Tigers.
Just on the text line here, Clark, I remember Australia v England, one day international at the SCG. My brother and I were in a corporate box. Clarkey hit the winning runs after England made 300. And after we ended up on the roof of the SCG, not one person saw us. Someone from Campbelltown, haven't got your name there, but there you go. Got up onto the SCG.
That not a bad place to celebrate, I would have thought.
Didn't get caught either by the sounds of it.
Get caught and get down safely. Not a bad day out.
Must have found a set of stairs up some...
Who knows?
Some entrance. But, he would have had quite a few... Well, you would have had some late nights on the SCG wicket and other wickets. What?
Change room. Yeah. I've heard some. Yep. Generally, that was our place to really enjoy yourself. It was just your teammates, support staff, no cameras. Generally, a lot of the time, no phones as well. You keep your phone switched off. We had some late nights in there at the SCG.
Actually, a friend of mine was covering your tour in South Africa when you won very late, thanks to Ryan Harris. And he witnessed some of the celebrations.
In Cape Town.
Yeah. I think he said James Pattinson was close to best on ground.
Patto was a good celebrator. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, we did that well. Mm. We were very good at celebrating our success. Yeah. Sometimes we were good at drowning our sorrows, but celebrating our success, we were, I think Australian cricket does it very, very well.
Morning, Dick.
Hey, boys.
These NBA playoffs, wow. A couple of game sevens and... just describe this fallout for the Phoenix Suns and their loss to Dallas at home, a 64-win team who trailed on their home floor in a Game 7 against a team they were very much expected to beat. They were down by 46 points, was it, at one stage?
I can't think of, at least in recent memory, of a home team in a game seven of a playoffs that got blown out like that. I mean, it was, you know, at times you'll have games that are competitive for a while and maybe the road team gets hot and they pull away and they win by 10 or 15. This game was over 5 minutes into the game. I mean, and it was unbelievable. You just kept waiting for Phoenix to show up and show some fight. And there was nothing. There was nothing from Chris Paul. There was nothing from Devin Booker. They couldn't get Ayton going in the post. And Luka did whatever he wanted. Spencer Dinwiddie coming off the bench for 30 points. My goodness. I mean, it was truly an embarrassing performance by the Phoenix Suns. I mean, I think that is the only appropriate word that you can use to describe that. And now, you know, people are coming down on Chris Paul and they're saying, you know, his last best chance to win a championship. I mean, I don't know about that. I would certainly say every year that Chris Paul gets older, he has less and less of a chance to win a championship. But it wasn't a solely Chris Paul issue because Chris Paul had a very good series otherwise. You know, Devin Booker now has shown that maybe he's not the mega star that we all thought he was going to be. I mean, he was being crowned last year as, hey, the next great young mega star in this league. And he's proving more that maybe he's the best number two in the league, you know, a number two option in the league, or maybe just a middle of the road number one right now, because he's showing an inability to get his own shot the way that true number one options on championship teams are able to do. And we're seeing one in Dallas. You want a true number one option that can get his own shot? How about Luka Doncic? He's a true number one option that can get his own shot anytime he wants.
Dick, could there be something more to it? Because again, with expectation, the way they played, Phoenix were just, it was like you couldn't play that bad. Like it's nearly impossible for them to play that bad. Could there be something deeper here?
Well, I guess we could look back at Phoenix over the last, you know, month and a half. They were a very consistent team over the course of the year, but did not necessarily play. I mean, for Boston, for example, let's take a look at how Boston's played over the last month and a half, 2 months, versus how Phoenix has played over the last month or month and a half. We take a look at how Phoenix has played or how Memphis has played over the last month and a half. Phoenix would not be on the list of maybe top four or five teams in the NBA based upon how they've played for the last month and a half, but they put together a fantastic overall season. So I guess what we're seeing now is that, you know, it's a bit of a change. I mean, we've seen for years and years and years, you give me the number one, number two superstars in the league, I'll tell you who's going to play in the finals, right? That's how it's been. It's been LeBron. It's been Kevin Durant. It's been, you know, these guys. It's been Steph Curry. I mean, it's been, those are the guys that are winning championships. Those are the guys that are getting to the finals. But over the last year and this year, you know, it's more and more, hey, who's playing well at the right time? Who's putting it together on offense and on defense? Defense has been, I checked the numbers today. It's amazing. I think it was number one, I want to say number one, two, three, and five in defensive efficiency in the NBA are still in it. So guess what? Defense matters a little bit right now. And the true defensive teams are doing a nice job in making the Final Four.
At the end of his career, he's still only 23 years of age, Dick, but how do you reckon, if he's on this trajectory he's on at the moment, Doncic, well, how will we be talking about him?
It all depends on playoff success, period. I mean, that is going to be it. Talent-wise, he is going to be as great as Larry Bird. He's going to be, I mean, talent-wise, he is going to be, as long as he can, you know, as long as he stays in shape, and he's always, you know, he hasn't looked like the greatest Adonis physically. That's for sure. He carries a little bit extra weight. You know, he uses it very effectively, but he carries a little bit extra weight. How is that going to play when he's 29, 30, 31? How is that going to affect his longevity? That's going to be one question. But the number one question is, how many championships does he win? I mean, that's what it is in the NBA, right? It's how many championships do you win? That's how these greats are evaluated. And if Luka wins multiple championships, people will consider Luka as a top 10, definitely. maybe even top five player of all time, just based upon his elite, elite skill level. If he never wins a championship, if he never gets to a championship, I would doubt that he would never get there. But if he never wins a championship, and it's hard to win a championship, if he never wins one, he will never be seen as a top 10 player of all time, because people will look at the titles and say, sorry, you're excommunicated from the top 10 of all time if you never win a championship. But fortunately for Luka, he's got a decade plus of prime in order to win that title.
It's so good. Speaking of playoff success and the lack of it, James Harden and the Philadelphia 76ers. Describe the fallout that the 76ers are suffering, particularly. I could only imagine what they're copping in Philadelphia at the moment. And also mentioning the Bucks as well, who went down in Game 7 of Boston.
Well, we'll start with Harden. It's the most predictable outcome of any team and any player in the NBA this year, right? I mean, we've been talking about exactly how Philadelphia's season was going to end. The only difference is it didn't come down to a Game 7. I mean, I thought it would probably come down to a game, you know, game seven, and James Harden, you know, doesn't do anything in the last 2 minutes of a game and loses it. But it just collapsed on him. I mean, it just absolutely collapsed on Philadelphia. And James Harden was one of the primary reasons why. It's going to be a fantastic discussion. It's already a fantastic discussion on whether Philadelphia should bring him back or not. It's going to be a fantastic discussion on whether he's going to get the max somewhere else. I would not even come close to paying the guy the max. I would let somebody else make that mistake. James Harden is not the James Harden of 4 or 5 years ago in Houston. He's just not. He can't get around guys anymore. He can't defend anymore. I mean, he still can to a certain level, but not the elite level that he was then. You have to pay James Harden based upon what he's going to be worth at in his mid-30s. Not what he was worth when he was 27 years of age. You can't pay him that. That's suicide for a franchise. As for the Bucks, that really surprised me, guys. So we go from not a surprise at all in the Sixers to a big-time surprise in the Bucks. I thought it would go to 7, and I thought Milwaukee would find a way to beat Boston. And Boston showed to be the more complete basketball team. Chris Middleton's injury obviously definitely had something to do with it. I mean, you lose your number two option, you need the 3, 4, and 5 options to really step up and be stars. And they just didn't get that. They didn't get the Connaughtons and the Drew Holidays and those guys who stepped up last year to carry them to a title along with Giannis and Chris Middleton. They didn't get those guys to step up in order to help Giannis out, because at this point in the playoffs, as great as your superstar is, one guy can't do it. And I love Giannis. He may be my favorite basketball player in the world right now, but he just couldn't do it by himself and did not get enough and hand it to Boston. I mean, Boston played a fabulous Game 7. Stunning how they just dispatched the Bucks. I mean, I would have bet good money that that game was going to come down to the final minute, and it was going to be Jason Tatum or Giannis, who makes the big shot to win the game. And unfortunately, we got none of that. I mean, I turned that puppy off at the end of the third quarter. I was like, I don't need to watch the fourth. This is terrible. But good on Boston for advancing, and that's going to be a heck of a series.
How does this series play out then, Dick, today? We've got Game 1, the Heat taking on the Celtics. Who do you like, and the series overall?
Here's what I do. I think Boston wins a series. But if Miami wins today, you're going to get better value on Boston. So, and I think Miami's got a great shot to win today. Game one's at home. Place is going to be rocking. I think they're 2.5-point favorites. I might see if Miami wins today. If Boston wins today, I mean, it could go 6. And Boston takes care of things. If Miami wins today, your Boston number to win the finals goes from probably plus 250 to +4 or back to plus 500 maybe, because they're down 1-0 in the series. That's where I think you get your value, because I do think Boston wins the series. I think Golden State wins their series, and that sets up what I want to see in a finals matchup. I didn't get the finals matchup I wanted last year. I don't think anybody wanted Phoenix and Milwaukee in the championships last year. They wanted any other permutation other than Phoenix and Milwaukee. I think Boston and Golden State would be a ratings bonanza. Yeah. The Celtics against Steph and the Warriors would be crushing it in the television ratings.
Yeah, that would be a great series. Now, just to the NFL, we've got a great question here from Laura at Manly, because wondering what's going to happen, obviously, with Baker Mayfield there at the Cleveland Browns, and Deshaun Watson is there now. And the question here, Dick, is Baker Mayfield going to the Bahamas with Deshaun Watson and his offensive line?
Baker Mayfield, I don't know if any team or any country wants Baker Mayfield. That's the question. I mean, are they even going to let him in? It's just, it is interesting how far that star has fallen. He wasn't particularly well-liked when he was doing all these commercials, as good as they were. He was doing all these commercials and yet not producing on the field. We were making jokes that there's not a player in sports that has done less and has more advertising, more endorsements than Baker Mayfield. And it's all come crashing down on him. He's not a bad quarterback, but right now, no team wants to pay his contract. And Cleveland still doesn't know exactly what's going to go on with Deshaun Watson as far as how many games he's going to be suspended. And that's going to be the determining factor whether Baker Mayfield stays in Cleveland. And wouldn't that be drama, right? Cleveland doesn't want Baker Mayfield at all. And yet they may be forced to start Baker Mayfield for 4 games, 6 games, 8 games. Obviously, it's a short suspension. They'll just cut Baker Mayfield. But what if Deshaun Watson's suspended for 10 games? And you have Baker Mayfield on your roster. Do you really want to let go of Baker Mayfield and have your third-string quarterback start 10 games? No. You're going to start Baker Mayfield whether he wants to play for you or not.
They might get rid of him and go after Drew Brees.
Oh, wouldn't that be something if he came back? I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but you know, we've seen stranger things. We've seen stranger things happen. We saw Tom Brady retire then unretire. That was pretty bizarre.
What's happened there, Dick? Did he put out a tweet or something?
He did, and you know, his former coaches are saying it's in jest. He basically said, "I don't know what I'm going to do. I may go to a different TV station." He got let go by NBC. As a studio analyst after 1 year where he was pretty milquetoast. So he said, "I don't know what I'm going to do." He goes, I may try for another TV gig. He goes, "I may come back to football. I may, you know," he say, I may start on a pickleball tour. I may coach my kids in football. You know, but the line that he threw out there was, "I may come back to football." And that's got everybody buzzing. I would highly doubt it happens, but it would certainly be interesting to see.
We've got an ice hockey fan here. "Hey boys, ask Dick about the New York Rangers comeback. First team ever. 3-1 in the series and down every game in elimination games to come back and win in the playoffs." I don't know how much you've been following this, but I think you tipped us the Colorado Avalanche, who were through to the second round. But sounds like the New York Rangers, a dramatic win there in their playoff series. I think it was against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. And in dramatic fashion, we had some great game sevens. I mean, the NHL produced this weekend where the NBA fell flat. I mean, the NBA gave us no drama whatsoever this weekend, and the NHL gave us tremendous drama. And I saw a couple of videos, personal videos from cell phones of people in the crowd celebrating that game seven win. And it was, I mean, you would have thought they won the Stanley Cup. I mean, but there's a great Ranger following in New York. I mean, there's two New York teams, the Islanders and the Rangers. The Rangers have had far more success. They've got far more. I mean, they were a great team in the 90s with Mark Messier. And they have a big time following there. So you still have some teams in it that have a rabid, rabid following. And this is kind of the time now when we get deeper into the playoffs, we get to the Western Eastern Conference Finals. That's when I really start turning my eye to the NHL and kind of paying more attention to it. And I think I will now. It's getting pretty fun.
What about the golf this weekend, the PGA Championship? Who do you like in that?
Oh boy, guys, this is the toughest major that I've handicapped in a long time. I mean, because I can't find separation. It's going to be a bear of a course. It is long. It is tough. You've got to be long and place the ball in the right part of the fairway. If you miss the green, there's just runoff, almost like British Open style. There's not going to be any thick rough. It's you're going to hit the green. You could spin off it. You could roll down 30 yards. You could roll into a bunker after hitting the green and putting too much spin on it. It's going to be the guy that can just manage pars. Can you manage pars and take advantage of the very few birdie opportunities you're going to get? And, you know, that winner, I mean, probably in the 6 to 10 under par range. It is not going to be, it's going to be a tough track. And if we get the expected wind, and that's something I'm really going to look at tomorrow, is there a wind tee off favorability? Like, if it looks like the wind's going to be stronger on Thursday afternoon and Friday morning, I'd stay away from those guys. If it's flipped, I'd stay away from the early wave. But I see about 15 guys that can win it. And honestly, guys, I don't have two or three guys that I have really a lot higher than the rest. I've got this group. They're all elite. I think it's going to be an elite player. I think it's going to be a top 20, 25 player in the world that wins this thing, because I just think it's too much of a bear for somebody that, you know, kind of come out of nowhere. I'll give you a name that I've just kind of been set on. I mean, obviously Scottie Scheffler is probably, if I just had to say pick a winner, I'd probably go with Scottie Scheffler. Dallas ties, Tulsa's right up the street, played well again last week in the tune-up event. So Scottie Scheffler probably has the best chance to win of anybody, but it's going to be really hard to win the first two majors of a year. And then the other guy is Will Zalatoris, and I'd feel much more confident in Will Zalatoris if he had a tournament win in his back pocket and he kind of knew how to grind out a PGA Tour win and already had that and dealt with the pressure. Can Will Zalatoris, who I think is going to be right up there on Sunday, will he actually be able to win against all these guys that have not only won tournaments but won majors? So maybe you go top 10 for a Zalatoris if you want to take a bet right there. But, you know, those are the two guys I've been kind of thinking about for the last week. But, again, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this because I think it's going to be – it's a much more difficult tournament to handicap than, say, Augusta, where you got the same guys playing it every single year.
Okay, I like it for our listeners. Dick's tip in the PGA Championship, Will Zalatoris top 10, is paying $4.25 with Tabby's, $34 to win the tournament. Scottie Scheffler, the Masters champ, is the $12 favorite. Aussie Cam Smith, by the way, rated a $15 chance. Dick, thanks so much as always.
Going to be fun week, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Dick Frayne there. Now, new to Dali in 2022, Palace Pier, a five-time Group 1 winner by Kingman, unbeaten at two. He trained on at three, winning the Group 1 St. James's Palace Stakes. Like dominant size, Frankel and Shamadal. A $1.15 million yearling from the great Invincible Spirit line and out of a $4 million broodmare, he's everything that a thoroughbred should be, with the pedigree, the performance and the physical of a true champion. Palace Pier, new in 2022, standing at Dali. Agonising last couple of minutes here for Liverpool fans as they hold a 2-1 lead at St Mary's in stoppage time against Southampton. And if they hold this, it means they go into the final day with a chance. They'd be 1 point behind Manchester City. So if they won on the final day and City lost or drew, they would win the title and would have to force City to still need to win on the final day. But they've just got to survive what it will be a nervy couple of minutes there against Southampton. Now, last night in the A-League, Melbourne Victory beat Western United 1-0 in the first leg of their semi-final at Amy Park. And also this morning is the championship semi-final between Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United. And incredibly, Sheffield United are ahead 2-1 also in stoppage time. So this looks like it's headed for extra time if it stays this way. And the winner will play Huddersfield for a chance to play in the Premier League next year, the so-called £100 million game, as they call it. But at the moment, it is 3-3 on aggregate, and we're in stoppage time there in Nottingham. Now, earlier this morning as well, we were talking about celebrations gone wrong, and this is in relation to overnight. Bidium Girmay, who is an Eritrean who had become the first black African rider to win a Grand Tour stage in the Giro d'Italia, and he's been taken to hospital for a celebration gone wrong. He's popped a, and being Italy, not champagne, a Prosecco cork.
Of course.
He's popped a Prosecco cork in his eye. So there he is on the podium, making history, standing over the top of a, you know, one of the giant bottles of, well, Prosecco in this case, and whack. There goes the cork.
Mm.
Straight in his face, straight in his eye, off to hospital.
Have some of that. Sounds a bit weird, though. Why is the champagne on the ground? unscrewed. It must have been preparation ready for the shake and spray.
Well, he looks like he might be inexperienced in the popping of Prosecco.
With champagne, correct me if I'm wrong, and you might know.
I'm no expert.
Our listeners might know. Somebody might know. It can only be called champagne if it's from the Champagne District.
That's correct, yeah.
So even though, let's say, I don't know, we call it here champagne in Australia, if it's not made in the Champagne District, it can only be called sparkling wine. Is that correct?
Supposedly. In fact, our resident winemaker, who's from a family of winemakers, Will, correct. Our producer, has just stood up and given you the biggest tick of all time.
I always call it champagne, but I thought they were the rules.
Well, you're spot on. Okay. You've nailed it.
Nice. Anyway, you call it Prosecco. I'm saying the champagne cork got him in the eye.
No, but winemaker Will just said semantics here.
Okay.
It's Prosecco. It's Italy.
Okay. Like it.
We're all about accuracy.
Yes, I love it. Aren't we? I love your preciseness. Yet me, on the other hand, I'll just call it champagne.
Let me check what's going on here.
You nervous about Liverpool?
Oh, I'm very nervous, mate.
I actually want Liverpool to win this game. Nervous.
Well, it sets up a fantastic.
That's exactly right. I love that. I love that. There's still so much to play for, and that's like maximum pressure.
Oh,
you walk out. It's like a grand. That's why I love a grand final. See, I like the single grand final. I don't like the best of three for any sport. I like the one crack, one day. You
pressure
either turn
on.
Up. It's like Olympics. You know, you train your backside off your whole life. You know, 4 years in preparation to get that 10 seconds if you're running, or, you know, 2 minutes or whatever. One opportunity, one moment. That's where you talk about how you deal with pressure. It's that feeling inside your stomach is out of control. So on this occasion, I'm going for Liverpool.
They've won 2-1.
There you go.
So there we go.
Great news.
We go to the final day this weekend.
Bring
Man City on 90 points and Liverpool on 89.
Now we're talking.
And so City, and the ironic thing about this is City play Aston Villa in Manchester, but the manager of Aston Villa is the great Steven Gerrard, Liverpool legend, who will be, I'm sure, wanting to do a favour for his old club. And Liverpool are at home against Wolves. Wolves have had a very good season.
Liverpool has still got one to play as well.
Yeah, well, the thing is, in the final day, they all kick off at the same time.
Okay, so there's pressure on both. It's not just City under the pump. Liverpool still, I know Liverpool should win, but they're still going to win.
Exactly. Okay.
Love this.
Yeah, it's going to be nervy. But nothing beats, and I think it's some of the most dramatic sport I reckon I've ever watched. When Manchester City won the title back in 2012, and they hadn't won it for 40-odd years, and there they were at home against Queen's Park Rangers, who were fighting relegation. Manchester United just had to win, I think, at Sunderland. And City went down,
choked
miraculously. It looked like their season was gone. They scored two goals in stoppage time and won the title. I mean, they had blown it. They had absolutely blown it. Something that would have kept them up at night to this day, and they pulled it absolutely out of the fire.
Never over. Just hang in there for a little bit longer.
So these are the sort of things that can happen when it goes down to the final day. So I think we're going to hopefully see some drama.
Love it.
Early Monday morning. Jamie Rogers, morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and good morning to all of our listeners. Boys, off the back of the discussions that you've been having over celebrations that have gone wrong, I have two that come to mind, and one in particular, I think most Australians will remember this. It goes back to the 2001 World Swimming Championships. The women had just won the 4x200 metre relay, and Petrea Thomas jumped into the pool. So they were in lane 5, and because Italy still hadn't finished the race, they were about a metre away. Australia was stripped of their gold medal. They were disqualified. Ooh. And I will never forget those scenes of just watching Petrea Thomas just devastated, as you would be, but just devastated because they didn't realise that was a breach of the rules. And I remember the coach at the time was saying that it was a kangaroo court, and it was just such dramatic scenes. But ultimately, Australia was stripped of their gold medal. And the other one, which we spoke about during the Tokyo Games, a lady called Lindsay Jacobellis, who was in the snowboard cross back in 2006, she was leading by an absolute mile. And then just before she got to the finish, she did like a little jump where she flicked her snowboard in a celebration to basically say, I'm about to win the gold medal. And she fell. And so then the person who was quite far behind her ended up overtaking her, and Lindsay finished second. So she ended up getting a gold medal just at the most recent games, but it took that whole time from 2006. She was kind of always remembered as that girl that went and did the early crow and celebrated, fell over and lost her gold medal. So she did end up redeeming herself, but it took a long time after that.
And this is why, Clarkie, when Loz and I talk about early crows, Loz.
You never go to the early crows.
This is why we get angry at people who, you know, 100 metres out, go, you're home here. It is the car because these things happen.
Yeah, I know.
It's one of the worst things that can be said, isn't it, when you're watching a race?
Dreadful.
Oh. Someone just says it and 100 metres to go, oh, you're home here.
You're home.
That's why I don't like telling people.
See, I love that. I think I love it because you know people don't like it. I enjoyed that when we played cricket. Warnie hated it more than anybody else. So you do it with, you know, you'd watch, I don't know, Damien Martin get to 20 runs. And you go, mate, lock him in today. Honestly, how good is he? Impossible. I would say impossible to get out today, Marto. And you just watch Warnie go off his nuts. Shut up. How many times you need to do it? And again, because I was next in the bat as well.
Yeah.
So part of you, mate, I love Marto. Was one of my favourite players. I want him to make 100 every time he batted. But I didn't want to sit and watch all day. I wanted to get out there with him. So even if he got out, I was like, well, if he does get out, at least I get to go.
I'm in, yeah. Away I go.
Yeah, unless it was a green wicket and he'd be like, oh, nut, don't nick it. But Warnie hated it. He was so, for someone that was so carefree with 99% of the cricketing world, he was quite superstitious with that
stuff. The only thing I would say to that, in other sports, I don't really care. Yeah. In racing, though.
You do.
It's an uncanny knack of when someone says it, how you just get rolled. And from an impossible position. Oh, you're travelling. Jeez, you're travelling well.
Only when you've got your heart earned on it, or you hate it any time.
It's
more about your money than anything else.
Yeah. Absolutely financial.
It's funny when it happens to someone else.
You would laugh to.
Oh, 100% I do. And if I know someone's on something, I'll do it myself. Jeez, you're home here, mate. You're travelling.
Oh, you're the best.
Oh, I love doing it.
Guys, the swimming championships are kicking off today in Adelaide. So these are for spots in the World Championships in Budapest as well as the Commonwealth Games. They've merged the trials into two just because Budapest is next month and then the Comm Games are in July. Now, all eyes are going to be on Shayna Jack. She's aiming to make her first Australian team since the end of that two-year doping ban. So she's in tonight's 100-metre freestyle and she currently holds the fastest time in the world this year for that event. And then later in the week, she's in the 50-metre free, which she holds the third fastest time in the world. And what's really interesting about this year, guys, is swimmers like Emma McKeon, you're not going to see her at the trials, nor are you going to see her in Budapest. And she's now going to have automatic qualification into the Commonwealth Games. This is a one-off thing that Swimming Australia are letting them do because of this COVID-disrupted period where the Tokyo Olympics were delayed by a year, which means a lot of them aren't going to be swimming at Budapest. So they automatically will qualify for the Commonwealth Games because they won a medal in Tokyo.
What about a Cody Simpson, JR?
Yeah, so we're going to see him, Loz, in the 100-metre butterfly. And look, all reports are that he has taken this so seriously. He's gone off social media to be able to completely focus on his swimming. He's got every chance of making the team. And why as well, boys, is the Commonwealth Games, they actually can take the top three swimmers compared to the World Cups and the Olympics where they only take two. So he's got an even extra spot to be able to hopefully get his chance to go and compete. What's interesting is you mentioned earlier in the show, Jared, about Carl Chalmers, who is saying his body now feels like he's 40. He's had another shoulder surgery back in December. So he's only going to swim the butterfly events at these trials, which I found really interesting because he said the reason why he's chosen that is because it places less stress on the joints versus freestyle, whereas I think butterfly is one of the most difficult events to swim. It's hard, but anyway, so you will see Kyle up against Cody Simpson in that 100-metre
Cody's got a new girl, doesn't he?
Well,
did I read that the other day?
You did. Emma McKeon, who also dated Kyle Chalmers.
Go the swimmers.
Well, Emma McKeon also dated Kyle Chalmers, so her ex-boyfriend and current boyfriend will be going head-to-head in that 100-metre butterfly. So a little bit of swimming goss.
Oh, I didn't know that bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which it was just interesting. I was listening to Susie O'Neill
lanes
on the radio.
Beside each other or well, high five as they take off?
Well, Susie O'Neill was saying on the radio, she goes, does anyone else find it really interesting that the ex-boyfriend suddenly decides he wants to go back and swim butterflies so that he can go and whoop the new boyfriend's butt?
You know what? They're probably all great mates.
Yeah.
They probably, mate, you're all swimming together. You're seeing each other every day.
Yeah.
Like, get on with it. Everyone's probably play on. Mate, we've all got a pass. We've all got a pass. We've all got an ex. Move on. Get on with it. Grow up, you blokes.
Let's make a movie out of this. Serious.
You smell scandal here somewhere,
oh,
don't you?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
No, get on with it. Life is too short, boys and girls. Get on with it.
JR, game one, Eastern Conference Finals today. Miami against Boston. And you have got a same game multi for us that we can have a bet on with Tat.
I have. So I've got a multi. It's good value. We can have a bit of fun today. Tip off is at 10:30. And I liked listening to Dick Fain before because I'm on the same line of thinking as what he is. So I think that Miami's going to win today. I think Boston will win the overall series, but I do think Miami will win today at home. They've got an outstanding home record. They were the best in the East during the regular season and they're undefeated so far during the playoffs. And I think also they've just got a bit of fresher legs under them versus Boston, who have just finished that game seven against Milwaukee. So Miami to win today, and then we've combined Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero to score 40 or more points, but that's combined and that is paying $6.
$6, and there it is in its usual spot on the Tab app, the Tab website. Click on sport and then today's offers, and there's the Big Sports Breakfast NBA best. Miami to win, Butler and Hero to score 40 plus between them. $6. Yeah, I like it, JR. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
I'll be back with the news at 7. Wanted to mention as well, Royce's big walk, day two. Gee, I tell you what, they had a big day yesterday to start it, didn't they?
Nearly 40K yesterday, wasn't it? Yep. You know? Who's on the walk today with them?
This list I've got here, Kurt Fernley, who's a car call boy out that way.
Legend, Kurt.
Terry Lamb. Champion. Luke Goodwin, Paul Langmack. Today's 20Ks. They're going from Cowra to Woodstock.
Well, that's good. You only have to put up with Langmack for 20K. He will not shut up talking, Langmack.
He's a big talker, is he?
Oh, massive talker.
Really?
Yep.
Take your headphones.
As soon as you see him, he just goes at a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
He's one of those, like, as soon as you're still leaving the room, he's still talking.
It's Doug Bollinger. So Dougie was like, Dougie used to put your headphones in, act like you're on your phone. Act like you're talking to someone on the phone. You go, Dougie, mate, come on.
I've never seen a bloke with more energy than Langmack.
Yeah.
He must just start talking as soon as he jumps out of bed.
Oh, man.
And just continues to talk till he puts his head down on the pillow at night.
It's a lot of energy.
A lot of energy.
How good's that quarter?
But you probably need it today. When
yeah,
you're
walking. You're saying you get 5Ks in.
No, you're 5K in. Everything's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're talking and you're...
Wonder if they made it in time. Because they had to get there for the coaching clinic, didn't they? They only had 8 hours.
They'll be buggered by the end
it's
of this
a good high.
11 days.
Yeah.
Like when they're doing clinics, functions at night.
Dinners at night, that's a killer.
Getting up early the next morning and going again.
Oh. You reckon your beers at the function? You reckon you're having a few? Or you reckon
Well, you have a few, but you don't have too many.
Yeah.
Only because you're stuffed.
What time are they starting in the morning, do you reckon?
7, 8.
Yeah, so you're right.
It's usually 20K is okay today. But it's when you're consistently doing those 30 to 40
come day five, day six, day seven, see how you go.
Yeah, and your knees are starting to ply up, your hips
You reckon
are
Royce is having a few? He's not getting the massage when he gets to the destination.
Oh, yeah, he'd have massage. He'd have all that ready to go. But I reckon if you did have a couple, you wouldn't have any more than three or four because you're just too tired. And if you have a drink, you start to feel tired anyway.
On premature celebrations, this one. Darren Albert in the 2000 semi-final at the Sydney Football Stadium. And Knights v the Roosters blows a kiss at the camera at halftime when the Knights are up by a good margin. And then only to lose the second half in that semi-final with a memorable Brad Fittler intercept of Joey John's pass. No name to that one. But, blowing the kiss at the camera at halftime. That's right. That was the Knights were up by plenty.
Yeah, they were up by plenty. I can't remember him doing that. I can't remember Darren Albert doing that. But I remember they were saying that there was a lot of yahooing up the race at halftime and there was a bit of sledging from the Newcastle players to the Roosters players.
Well, that gets you fired up, doesn't it?
That rusty gate.
But I can't remember the kiss from Darren Albert. I can remember his try in 97.
I remember his running down Matt Sears as well in 97.
Geez, you had some heartbreak following the Bears, Mitter.
By the way, the website as well, roycesbigwalk.com.au, roycesbigwalk.com.au to donate to that cause for dementia research and support Roy Simmons and everyone who's walking from Goolagong to Penrith. And on the text line, morning boys, I was at the Cowra function last night for Royce's Big Walk and had a good chat to Terry Lamb. And Macca from Goolagong says, well, Bard, you know, needs a few Ks, so he's in there joining today. Good on you, Macca, getting stuck into the great bar. But please donate to dementia. All the best, says Macca from Goolagong. But who was it joining them today? It's Kurt Fernley, Paul Langmack. That's right. Luke Goodwin and the great Terry Lamb. So they're going 20 Ks today. Good on them. Adam Pengilly, morning to you.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. Why do you bring up Matt Sears, Jared? Why do you do it to him?
Yeah, exactly right. Every time he starts to talk about a North Sydney memory, he realises, he goes, oh, that's right. That happened in that big game where we lost.
Yeah, Darryl Halligan, what, he missed one kick in his life? Yeah, anyway, 91 prelim.
Adam, I was just telling Mido, actually, I had one of his teammates was my school teacher. Michael Buettner, yeah. He taught at my high school, talking about good
science.
And good players.
Didn't you say?
He was science, yeah.
How much science did you
do? Did. I went to class because he was the teacher. He was brilliant. There's a couple of classes I couldn't go to all the time because the teacher and I weren't best of mates. So they'd suspend me from cricket. So Wayne Holsworth was my cricket coach.
Imagine you with a beaker and a Bunsen burner.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. I wasn't a safe classroom. I used to get bored quickly. I think that was my greatest weakness at school. I didn't have the patience to sit there for the entire period or double period. So then misdemeanors started to happen.
You'd be like, put the white coat on.
I think you had to, and the hairnet at some stages, so you didn't singe your hair.
You like Bart Simpson?
Yeah,
in that
glasses.
Yeah, those big goggles. Yeah. But anyway,
what are we talking about? Racing.
Michael Buettner.
Racing. Michael Buettner. Where is Michael Buettner, by the way?
Now?
What's he doing now, Adam? Do you know?
No, Loz, he was in charge of the match review committee for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I said to Clarkie. No, I don't know where he is.
Should have stayed in science. Definitely should have stayed at school.
No, he's not doing it anymore, but he definitely was in charge of the match review committee for a few years there, going back, maybe 3 or 4 years now. But how does a footy player become a science teacher?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he did. I think he sort of helped out. He must, obviously, qualified teacher, but he must have just done all subjects. But for a long period, he was doing science. Yeah, he obviously ran the footy program there as well for an amount of time.
Okay.
Great fella. And again, you're a kid as well. So you're not, I didn't know, I knew he played rugby league for the Bears, but I didn't know him like I know him now. But as a teacher, awesome teacher as well. Mm. He was disciplined enough, but he was still, you know, he didn't feel like the school principal was in your face all the time.
He's very casual.
Yeah, he was awesome. Awesome guy.
According to LinkedIn.
Here we go.
He's the National Director of Coaching and Development at Oztag Australia. So there you go.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I tell you what he was. Fit.
Oh, yeah.
Mate. And even like after school, like seen him 5 years ago, still ripped, fit and healthy.
Well, there you go. We found where Michael Buettner is.
Oztag, did you say?
Now, John O'Shea has a filly that's been well backed on debut in the Kenzo track today. They're racing, aren't they?
Yeah, they haven't missed it today, have they, Jared? Koshu, her name is, in the second race. And it's always fraught with danger backing horses just off the one trial, in particular a short course trial, only 700 metres at Randwick there. But wow, haven't seen a horse trial like her for a while. James McDonald was on board and he almost had his arms ripped out of his socket under absolutely no pressure in that trial. And she looks well above average. So very keen to see what she can do today. J-Mac obviously doesn't ride a whole lot for John O'Shea these days. He's obviously the trainer that brought James across to Australia from New Zealand all those years ago, and obviously spreads his wings a little bit further now with Chris Wilde and Godolphin. But usually when he rides on for John O'Shea, it goes pretty well, and suggests this filly is well and truly above average.
How did Michael Poy go with his appeal?
Were you sitting on the appeals panel yesterday, Loz?
Yeah. You made sure that he didn't get any reduction in his sentence.
I'm happy with that. I'm happy that they stuck fat.
You want him out for years.
No, I just said...
Loz wants to put him into retirement.
I just thought it was the right decision.
You're just the punter's pal, aren't you, Loz?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, he had no luck, Loz. He had no luck at all. So the two-month suspension stands. I still think he's a little bit stiff to be sitting on the sidelines for that long, but the VRT down there decided that what the stewards dished out was the appropriate punishment. So I think he made submissions to the VRT. He was going to lose probably roughly in the vicinity of $55,000 to $60,000 in riding fees and winning percentages over the next 2 months. So it's going to be a very, very costly brain fade for him, but he'll suck it up and get back in the saddle hopefully in a couple of months' time and start riding some winners again.
Front page, we saw make an absolute mess of them in the town plate. What, heading to Flemington?
Yep, down the straight six this week, Jared. So Jeff Duray obviously doesn't plan too far ahead with his horse, given all the issues he's had in the last couple of years. But he was so good winning that Wagga Town Plate, wasn't he? Just so dynamic and certainly produced a performance that I wasn't quite sure he's capable of first up. So he'll head down to Melbourne and try and get himself ready for that race there on the weekend. We know he's raced well down in Victoria in the past and down the straight. So you just can't plan too far ahead with him these days, can you, because of all the issues he's had. But I think he'll legitimately run really well there on the weekend.
What about at the Kenzo today? Do you like anything?
Yeah, it's a good meeting today, Loz. I don't mind one a little bit of odds. Race 7, number 3, So United. He was first up at Canterbury there over a trip that was just far too short of his best and obviously got way back in the field in the second half of the field, which is not his go. He loves to get control of races. He's stepping up sharply in trip today, second up. I think getting close to double figures, he might be able to get some control of this race and give a really nice sight. So that's race 7, number 3, So United.
Race 7, number 3, So United is a $9.50 chance and is the second best backed after the favourite, Cumbella Fee. And what was the other horse you mentioned earlier? The John O'Shea filly. That's in race 2.
Yeah, Koshu. Race 2. Yep,
that's $2.25. That's been heavily backed. But you're best out, Adam. Race 7, number 3, So United. $9.50. Yes, please. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
See you, boys.
And the great Dean Bulldog Richie is in the house, and he is fired up. Have a go at that. Have a go at that. He's dancing. Oh, that's troubling.
That's the best view of him.
What's he doing there? He's like scrubbing his back in the shower. What's he doing there? The Bulldog.
I don't know if I'm going to get that image out of my head.